Juventus as the word will describe Jack Vies, a reputation of gravity with Jack Vies and Reed Robbins guitar, Blair McKay, Bill Brennan, Mark Duggan, and Rick Sachs percussion, along with an Emacs and a Macintosh. You've been listening to Radio Music Gallery on CKLN 88.1. Alan Davis and Paul Hodge with you. Hope you can get to sleep after that last piece. We'll be with you again next week. Good night.
Public service announcement contains explicit language. The message is part of a campaign promoting active, safer sex practices.
There's no reason to be shy about insisting on condoms.
Even if you know your sex partners really well, there's no way of knowing what their former partners' lives were like.
One of them could have come into contact with the virus that causes AIDS.
So even if you've been in a relationship for a couple of years, it's never too late to start practicing safer sex.
Whether you're with an old friend or a new one, use a condom when you fuck.
These ideas were brought to you by Utility Grade in cooperation with Safe Sex Corps.
There's no message here, only the spectacle of a civilization which is eating itself and desperately trying not to admit that it wants to die.
Attempt to educate themselves, live in a kind of dissolving fantasy as they completely forget what happened last Tuesday.
Freedom in a vacuum. The last Sunday of each month at 11 p.m.
Indian Embassy today, and when I have to take a number for 22. Ah! Not only that, they go to call number 21 and nobody shows up. They went through numbers 10 through 20. Everybody goes up there and presents their documents. 21, there wasn't anybody there. Talk about a setup to give me number 22. Oh boy, come on. What is this, Bob? So, that's another one. That number is still very operational and right here at home. But that's consular ground, of course, you know, diplomatic immunity. So I was in India for part of today, and that's part of the discarnate existence, the diplomatic posting. Something else you just, in a true grounded physical sense, there's a discarnateness on diplomatic ground. So, that's not a hidden ground, that's a visible ground. Yeah, you're right. Now, what I want to say is about 10 past 7 and...
Cut. Welcome, listeners, to the Church of the Subgenius, the Gospel Hour. Next half an hour, 45 minutes or so, you tend to stretch things, don't you?
Thanks to you, Mike.
Yeah. Time is elastic.
Welcome, Doug. Welcome. Nice to have you here tonight.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
What's on the platter tonight, Bob?
Well, I feel very honored to have one of the greatest subgeniuses in the Toronto region here with me tonight.
Greater Metropolitan Toronto region.
Yeah. I mean, this person has the guts during the Christmas season to read Lyndon LaRouche's biography and McLuhan's Laws of the Media at the same time. I defy anybody else to claim that.
Both books at the same time.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Doug, it's
That is still recovering. I still have to go over the laws of the media again, and now that I've got the earlier version of...
Say his name.
Of the LaRouche. The LaRouche autobiog. And a copy of the New Federalist. Mm-hmm. And my Bob present. Which Kent gave me. Kent was very generous and gave me a copy of the New Federalist. So I'm going to be busy the next few nights.
So how
doing postgraduate subgenius work.
Postgraduate?
Yeah.
Just tell me about LaRouche a little more, Doug. I'm surprised you're reading LaRouche.
Well, it came about, I worked at the University of Toronto Library, Fort Book, or Battlestar Robartica, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it. And one day a woman who I know from work said that there were all these right-wing books coming in to the library. I think she mentioned Ehrlichman and LaRouche. I said, really? Could you get it for me? So she got it for me, and I started reading it.
Oh, what about when you went out?
I'm getting to that. I started reading it, and I guess she assumed wrongly that I was going to keep it in the library and read it on my break or something, but or just look at it, but I intended fully on reading it. So I took it home in a few days, and somehow she hadn't checked it out, so I'm going through the turnstile one day, and I almost go over the turnstile, and there's this woman there saying, empty your bag. So they find me with a stolen LaRouche book. Then I have to go through the whole rigmarole of getting a library card and then taking the book out. But I read it mainly because Bob is always talking about LaRouche, and I wanted to see what the guy had to say about himself in his own words, because usually he's the only way he's represented, to me at least, is either through the media or through Bob. So I thought, I can trust Bob. Yeah. One of them has to be lying. And it wasn't Bob.
Uh-huh.
So I read LaRouche, and I came, I saw that he's as dangerous to the people who fear him as he is. But I don't think he's a danger to me.
Nice going there, Doug. That's the right way to say it. He ain't a danger to you.
No.
That's not a ringing endorsement.
No, of course not.
But I'm not afraid of him.
Great.
Can we apply LaRouche's knowledge? And I acknowledge that Lyndon LaRouche is, a highly intelligent man. How can we apply this to the Subgenius Manifesto? Bob?
Just that he can dance on the true former Secret Council of Ten's toes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he does that. I mean, he doesn't deal with me. He doesn't know about me taking over. He doesn't know that his work is now usurped into my larger program. But we can appreciate what was done in the conditions I had to work under when I was on the Secret Council of Ten, not in the chairmanship position. LaRouche was very eloquent in expressing the dilemma of that situation. So, does that answer? No, it doesn't answer the question, does it? How can we use it?
Tiptoed around the question.
Well, historical perspective. You can use LaRouche for up till early 70s, and then you have to tune into Dr. Beter to find out how events today have led to even a post-revelations from the Bible situation.
Mm-hmm.
The fundamentalists are...
But one of the things I got from the book, which I think might apply to the Subgenius, is his way of dealing with problems. It seems that the Pinks deal with problems by ignoring them or beating them into submission, whereas he sees them as things that can be dealt with and overcome. At least that's what I got from what he said in his autobiography.
Cultural optimism.
Yes.
And he also establishes a way of going at the problems through a process. He doesn't mm-hmm. have definite answers, but he certainly has a method that includes process and adjusting to events as they show up.
Yes.
It's not a pre-planned situation.
Yes.
But on this kind of stuff, you would never even know it was discussed by LaRouche on the regular media stuff.
No. I mean, what you read in the papers, and then, it's not the same person. I mean, I think he's right when he says that they misrepresent him, at least from his own words.
Yeah. And now then you flip over to McLuhan, which explains why the media misrepresents him. I don't think LaRouche has a full understanding of the tetrad process.
I think I don't think he does, but I think a lot of it comes down to laziness. I'm becoming more and more convinced that journalists are just plain lazy people, and they will not go in depth. They will not read a McLuhan book. They'll read The Jacket, or they'll read a short essay about McLuhan, which is on their level.
Well, they don't have time.
Yes.
You know, if you have to participate in putting on a newspaper or TV show, I mean, they are harassed. It's a horrible job. In fact, I was going to talk later about journalism and, you know, how I'm the greatest journalist alive and all arts must have a journalistic aspect now to be relevant. That's what's interesting about LaRouche. He has one of the finest journalistic organizations in the world. But the journalists who work in the major corporate mixed media world, they don't have time to present a properly researched situation. I mean, you've got a foot
on... But the mistake is that people read it and assume that they're informed. And instead of the newspapers saying... We're sort of just giving you the hors d'oeuvres. They actually say, you know, we're the meal. That's why I think watching television news is not good, except as entertainment.
Well, no, it's like getting into a bath. That's the problem. Journalists give up trying to communicate something in particular with exact meaning. A minute, Doug. This is a very important point. Because the audience consumes, what do they call them?
He called them Doug.
We're all the same, man. We're all discarnate, right?
Can we just keep our analogies? You know, that's not, cleanliness or food, one or the other, if you don't mind.
Oh, okay, Mike. But try to absorb what I'm going to say. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to tell you that journalists put out information for their reason. And then the consumer of news consumes the news for another reason. Most of them do it for participation in a collective consensus of what the world's doing in general. A colossal preference.
That's how much I wonder what is on the news is actually news.
No, it's not news in the old journalistic sense. It is some...
It's an audio bite or a video bite. They're bites. It's food. I'm coming back to the food again.
Yeah, the content is bites, but the overall effect of news is to give people in their electronic autonomy position.
Indigestion, perhaps.
It keeps the disease going. The word makes a market, and then the IC card makes a lot out of it.
There are the biases as well, which we're forgetting. You know, every reporter has his or her own bias.
Oh, no, that's irrelevant. They don't even have their bias. They don't put any, there's a nut. They only state what happened. Somebody walked here, shook somebody's hand, and disappeared. You know, there's no bias put in there.
The way in which it's stated surely suggests bias.
I think the Sun cover today was kind of biased.
What was that?
It refers to a public. Angled towards a public. In other words, the public that consumes the medium is biased. Mm-hmm. The journalist is just feeding it up. Right? Well, that's his job. No private point of view put in there. He knows the role he plays and what the audience wants. When the Sun became a new paper and a popular paper, a public was born. Not a star was born, a public was born. All right? But to understand how the news is gives people in their electronic autonomy. We're all super angel discarnate people. So, to have a sense of the other, of a social community in action, people put the news on to get a bunch of collective images that are knowable, like semiotics, movie images, gestural images, that give someone a nostalgia for when there was a community. Mm-hmm. So the journalist has no way of projecting his own personal campaign or bias or purpose of what he thinks he's doing in a privileged way into that situation. The computerized environment feeds on itself, and we in the computerized environment is an extension of us. That's why it's really good to read LaRouche in it, because he actually, they ignore all that, and they actually give you some details.
News. Yeah. Some details, yes.
And they inventory all the news organs all around the world and present it in an inventory. But then McLuhan comes in, all right, and he explains the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So
why things
did you get
are the
from
way
that?
Well, to tell you the truth, the McLuhan book is very tough going. I haven't finished. I bought it over Christmas, and I'm reading it now. And, what am I getting from the McLuhan book? I'm beginning to understand how important he is to understanding today.
Understanding me.
Uh-huh.
Remember, we're talking about
you.
And
you are today.
Yeah, I am I am today. If you want to take today, you take Bob, put him on, you wear him like, well, he doesn't like the food metaphor, you wear him like a bath, right?
I prefer the food to cleanliness.
Oh, the indigestion, yeah. Well, Bob is a enema, you know.
Okay.
Bob's an enema. You eat and then you.
Have I got?
Yeah. So, but McLuhan.
Looking at the tetrads, the first I'm halfway through the tetrads. I'm in they were divided into three groups. I think I'm through the first one, with the refrigerator smoking.
Right.
And it is it's his way of looking. If you don't necessarily look at his inventions as problems, but as trying to incorporate them into your life, and not as a problem, but as a challenge, he's approaching it the same way as LaRouche. He has a process which it goes through, and you analyze what it's enhancing, what it's retrieving, what it's making obsolete.
Yeah, he offers a model, a process that includes his view, but also includes the user's view, the way the user can adapt it.
So, and he brought up a good point about man inventing all these things, and without, I mean, television is a prime example, inventing something and never testing to see actually its effects, actual physiological effects.
Or social, or psychic?
Or social, yeah.
All those causes, they just dumped it on, now we don't know.
It's sort of like, the technological equivalent of germ warfare. They're putting these things out there, and...
Yeah, but look, I was on the Secret Council, and I was privy. They knew what they were doing.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, that's why they blackballed McLuhan, because he whistle-blew on the thoughts that was going on about... I mean, they studied the effects way back there in the early part of the 20th century. They knew what this would do, but they didn't know all the effects, and they didn't know that Bob would be the result of this. It's like when they did acid. They had a particular method or purpose to put out LSD, and it went beyond what they planned. And so they do plan.
So they're smart, but not smart enough.
That's right. Now, McLuhan blew the process on what they were thinking about, but even described what they didn't know about, and that made them extra mad. But they didn't even know what he was talking about on that level. They just knew he blew what they thought they were doing. So they gave him the Order of Canada and got rid of him. Kicked him off the Bilderbergers.
Where?
He was invited to the Bilderbergers in 1969.
Oh, you told me that, yeah. You told them that they were all idiots.
And you can, very eloquently, but you can read it in the letters, the book, The Letters of McLuhan, May 1969, part of the book. He writes this incredible letter to Prince
Now,
Bernard.
One thing he mentioned, there's a part where he seems to say that through a lot of the inventions, man has left his natural state. But I wish I had my book here, but I wrote something in the margin saying, part of man's nature is also to invent.
Yeah.
So if man's nature is inventing, then he is always in his nature.
That's right. Now,
but he would seem to be making the case that we had left our nature.
No, that's you're talking about the first part of the book.
At the end of the first chapter.
Yeah, at the end of the book, he talks about the first nature, which is our biological nature, and the second nature. Man's second nature is what he makes, man's world, the technologies and artifacts, and they interplay. So when you're saying he had left the first nature, that was the Greek nature, capital N, that was created by visual space, in particular the phonetic alphabet.
Mm-hmm.
We went beyond that.
Or
there was chaos before Greeks. I mean, there was just the buzzing confusion of reality. You could call that nature. But then that was small n nature. When the Greeks started the realm of ideas, archetypes, and philosophy, they started to put nature in a framework and then started to categorize and inventory the parts of nature. But that was in a visual framework based on the phonetic alphabet. That has been usurped. We've left that capital N nature created by the Greeks when we went into the new environment created by the electric environment, which he calls acoustic space. It went around the visual space. So he's talking about leaving visual nature, all right, in that first part of the book. And then we go into a new electric nature. Both natures are creations of man. They're within the category of second nature, small n.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the first nature, reality created by who knows what, you know, me or God, we haven't decided yet. But, you know, the biological world that was created, you know, the stars and earth, that's the first nature. So you're just confusing the first part of the book.
I know, I'm going through it. I wouldn't say I'm reading it, and now I'm going to go through it again. And
you'll read it for the rest of your life.
Yeah, that's what I also figured. After reading the Gutenberg Galaxy, Understanding Media, various Bob supplied McLuhan clippings, and now this book, you got to go back and start reading them.
Or he revitalizes reading. He makes reading interesting.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he's not. I mean, not that they're right. If the sign of a good writer is you want to keep going back, then.
Yeah.
He's certainly as enriching and fulfilling as a fiction writer, which these days the nonfiction writers aren't thought of that way. He's being didactic openly, whereas fiction writers tend to be didactic.
Yeah, that's right. And traditionally nonfiction was didactic, but he flipped it. Yeah, he created a simplest involving technique through his form of nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
And he was describing the genuine fake of our world. Fake from the word fiction. Fiction comes from fake. So the genuine fiction of our world is something that he could write about as if it was nonfiction.
Or the fiction of the world we've made.
Yeah, he's writing fiction about a man-made fiction.
Now,
but we call it nonfiction.
Salvador Dali dying.
Well, Dally died because he heard my show Sunday night, the three-hour extravaganza Dave Neufeld and I did, and that was January 22nd, full moon, and Walter Bowert, author of Operation Mind Control, said all the great ones die at the age of 84, 7 times 12. You know, you've got the 12, the magical number, 7, the old occult number, 7 and 12 is 84. A lot of the great ones died at 84. Dally died at 84, and he died while my show was in progress the night of January 22nd, going into 23rd. Yeah, and that was the power of my show Sunday night, even though I had nothing to do with it. It was anonymously presented. But it was basically an inventory of Bob Marshall's work, you know. So that's why Dally died. You know, he heard Furry Lent in August. And then
but
he
what did he have to do with the creation of the fiction of the world we live in?
Well, Mark McLuhan once said that Dally, he said the world today, and he said this in the 60s, was to him a vast surrealistic theatrical environment. Much as if the world itself, he said, to him was like something that had been created by Dally. In other words, when you get into Dr. Beter and organic robotoids, that sounds like science fiction or something surrealistic or fantastic. But when you realize that's the truth, then you look at what you're taught when you're a kid in school and then what the real reality is. Then you realize there's an amazing hallucination going on.
Now, to get into surrealism and fiction taken as reality and held up as reality. Now, I didn't pay much attention to the U.S. presidential race, but I didn't watch the inauguration, but I did have the radio on in my dark room, and the news report, they were talking about George's inaugural speech, and the first thing he did in his speech was he said a prayer, and then he talked about 1,000 points of light.
Now, ooh, 1,000 points of light. I heard that.
1,000 points of light. And I'm beginning to, you know, I believe in mysticism and occult, but I don't recommend it as a form of government, a way to run a country. Well, I don't think it was invented for that. So he's created a fiction and 1,000 points of light, and everyone's going, that's going to make this country.
Now, that's exactly why LaRouche is so valuable, because LaRouche explains the roots of the modern power structure from the Order of the Golden Dawn.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, yeah, I think it adds more credence to your...
To what LaRouche is saying?
That these Gnostics...
Yeah, the Gnostics, they are the last manipulative black magic control, and they have to use the invisible control, what I call the old invisible nature, because the new nature is beyond the control, so they have to reveal the invisible occult nature. It's obsolete, but that is their new fake that they offer, because the old realistic natural concepts don't work anymore, right? So what concepts are going to come up with? The old occult ones. And the 1,000 points of light, that's something straight out of Dave Worster and Cosmic Awareness.
That's also straight out of a Buddhist teaching, but it has the... It's 1,000 points of light, but the source of the light is the moon, and it's 1,000 bowls in a courtyard. Hmm. That's when you align yourself so you can see the
moon. That's a brilliant image.
In all 1,000 bowls.
But that's Doug is a really, really participating subgenius to note that 1,000 points of light. I mean, there was the mystical hijacking going on. And that's why the new mysticism, which is elucidated by LaRouche and McLuhan, is brought together in me, in the way I discuss things, you know, every 2 years. 2 weeks in normal calendar situation, but under electric speed-up conditions, it seems like every 2 years. But what I describe, because I went way ahead of my generation and studied the future through these guys, and therefore I'm the only one who's qualified to articulate on a regular basis, in a live basis, what's going on. And what's great is to have other subgeniuses hear what I say, go out, notice things that are said. Yeah, apply it in a sense of say that echoes what Bob's warning us about, or celebrating.
And
Bob's
warning. And also, I mean, even within, George was inaugurated on Friday, and by last Friday, we had the...
By last Friday?
You going by last... Here? No, when was George inaugurated?
Just this past...
This Friday, 20th.
Okay, but leading up to that were the... the corporate mergers and the expanding of the corporate socialism within Canada.
Yeah,
I think they were preparing us for, I mean, if he is part of...
Yeah, and he's coming to Canada first.
Yeah.
So it's hard to tell whether he's a Rockefeller or Bolshevik-controlled. It's tricky. I think he's in the interval, but one of the signs is he's suffering...
His relationship to the Queen. Isn't that important?
His relationship to the Queen?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. See, Bush is an interval guy. He's right in the interval. In the long run, he is working for Rockefeller and the... And
that's
the
why, yeah, Lynch. I think he's only going to be in 4 years, because I think, you know... People are going to get tired, and he's not strong enough. And I think there's They don't really know who would have been there.
He'll be shot by a LaRouche fanatic within 2 years.
Yeah, LaRouche is being sentenced this Friday, and we could see some repercussions. But here is a point. I'm glad you bring up the assassination, because I was going to Bush's first public task was, when was it, Monday, he made a statement about abortion to a fundamentalist rally or a right to life rally. Over the phone. He would not go out into the rally. Now, we know the Bolsheviks control the right wing in the United States. So if he's a Rockefeller, then the Bolshevik group within that rally were hoping he'd come out, maybe snuff him like they tried to do with Reagan. Because Reagan was brought in at first as a Rockefeller guy, too. The Rockefellers can control the domestic
Bolshevik.
He what?
He left the Bolshevik. He was brought in as a Rockefeller, and he left the Bolshevik.
No, Reagan was always a Rockefeller asset. And Zappa did a song in the 60s called Reagan the CIA Man. And the CIA was the Rockefeller-controlled organization. So he was brought in as an asset once the Bolsheviks took over the Carter administration. And so Reagan was brought in 1980, and then he was shot immediately. And by late 81, he was Bolshevik-controlled. But then those events from Reykjavik 86, Contragate, all that was a retrieval of the Rockefeller power, and they did a switch with Reagan, and Reagan was fully Rockefellerized for the last year. And then Bush got in to continue that. But he knows he has to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to wonder where Mulroney fits in that, because Canada is Bolshevik-controlled, was Rockefeller, but basically a Bolshevik-controlled zone right now, and it's interesting to watch Mulroney. I don't think these guys are one or the other. They come from a background from one or the other. But once they're in the Oval Office or 24 Sussex Drive, they represent a whole confluence of different influences, different power blocks. And so you can't really define what they are, but you can define the people around them. Like all the guys he's pointed on his cabinet, LaRouche said in a recent editorial, all these new people in Reagan's cabinet are part of, from the 70s, the Nelson Rockefeller government that never was. Which means Carter was Nelson Rockefeller controlled, but Nelson never got to be president.
Mm-hmm.
So, but all those guys from the Nelson Rockefeller apparatus in the 70s are back with Bush, and they all played key roles in Contragate. You have John Tower, the Tower Commission.
Mm-hmm.
All these guys were part of that, you know, inroad against the Pentagon, and now you have Pentagate. They're really coming down on the Pentagate with these investigations.
The cover of the New Federalist kind of thing. But
yeah, because
the infiltration of Pentagon.
Yeah, well, LaRouche defends Pentagate because in the long run, the reason LaRouche got busted in 86, that was when the Rockefellers made the move, and I think LaRouche's organization is used and controlled by the Bolshevik-controlled Pentagon. And LaRouche did have a Trotskyist leftist background,
mm-hmm.
so he had the connections, and so when the Bolsheviks came in the early 80s, they hoiked LaRouche up. And then when the Rockefellers came back, they had to get rid of LaRouche, and that's why LaRouche supports the Pentagon and Star Wars, the old Bolshevik Pentagon program. And so that's obvious, isn't it? Once I say it. It's so obvious once I say it.
It's staring me right in the face.
Mind-boggling, yeah.
No, it's mind-clarifying.
Yeah.
Now, Mike, you haven't had a chance. Do you want to interject some impressions?
Well, I think you two have patted each other on the back enough for tonight, so why don't we
move on?
There. I wanted to play for you a bit of... Can I play a bit of this tape
tonight? Yes.
It's sort of unique, and I want to tell you that I got this tape. I actually have three tapes now from this fellow. Another Subgenius show, this time. Oh, the phones. I wonder if we should take any phone calls tonight.
Well, just check, see if this is
ringing?
Important.
I could pick it up. Ringing. Why don't you two talk amongst yourselves? Hi, CKLM.
Well, let's just
say... Oh, so he's left.
Yeah, so he has to do it. Usually has
we're babysitting
on.
The airways? Is that what he's told
us? Well, I want to give you a concept while Mike's there. Oh, I think we got a question. I bet there's an Andy LaRouche. They just hate
Bob, it. Bob, this is horribly embarrassing because I think we're the ones on air.
What is?
I think we're the ones on air. We're supposed to be talking about.
We're all on air.
We're all on air. People can hear
process.
Us talking
this
right now.
We're showing, it's like how the show is made. You know, the making of the show. You know,
behind the scenes?
Yeah.
The
so
making of
we're allowing the behind the scenes making process.
I see.
I mean, normally the show is scripted, but we like to improvise these phone calls.
You can tell when you're at home that it's scripted.
Yeah.
I mean, I have often sat in
well, this is one of the greatest plays of the 80s in Toronto, this work.
Mm-hmm.
The greatest theatrical enterprises.
It's certainly the most challenging radio going on in Toronto at the moment.
Oh, that's a great statement. Did you hear that, Mike?
No, I didn't.
He said this show is the most challenging radio alive today here in Toronto.
Yeah, but everyone ignores it. Did you know that the CBC was down doing interviews with everyone, but they didn't come to us? There's going to be a spot on the Journal Friday night.
About you?
About CKLN and community radio.
Well, I think
this CKLN?
This CKLN, yeah. There's only one of them. Dude.
Well, look, man, we felt...
didn't come to us, did they?
Well, no.
They didn't come to us! No, but we're the hidden ground, Mike. We're the...
No, wait. No, wait, Mike. You're
That's
missing.
Mike, because there would be a conflict of interest because you work on a CBC production, I think, is probably where...
Think of that. Because
they've got moles in here, right? They sent Anton and Bren Merge in here as moles to turn people, and they've got Anton and Bren Merge moles.
Like hell.
They sent word back, said Mike is working on Degrassi.
I think I'll drink this tape head cleaner.
The thing is, Mike, it's really important to understand the process here, because 60 Minutes interviewed Zappa a year ago almost, when he was on tour, March, April. They never broadcast it, but the point is they came in to get inside his tour and blow it apart. And, of course, the tour eventually was interrupted by a so-called war broke out between his bass player and drummer. But it was planted probably by CBS. Whatever they can do to you through mind control, they come in. They never broadcast Zappa, that 60 Minutes thing. I look at this CBC thing as when they start looking at us, as Skolnick says, if NBC ever asked him to go to their studio or CBS, he would go in inside a tank. He'd wear a tank if he had to go near those guys. And we're in the same situation, I tell you. The point is, they came here to check us out. We got to be extra paranoid for the next couple of weeks, because we don't know what they've planted here while they're there doing the interviews. I mean, this is outrageous.
And I have nothing to mention about the CBC. Brave New Waves. Now, I like to listen to Brave New Waves, and I leave the radio on all night. And for maybe the last 4 months, they've been doing a new show for half of it and then playing an old one.
Mm-hmm.
And then first week of November, they had a very long, it was pre-taped, but it was a live interview with Genesis Peorage. And now they don't even play the second half. So I wake up in the middle of the night because they have dead air, but it's not dead, it's a whine. So because they let Peorage on the radio, and it broadcast all across the country, they decided, you guys have gone too far.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they don't have the second half on?
They don't have the second half. I don't understand what's going on. I was going to call the CBC up today.
Well, the CBC is
the
something...
The tape has gone missing. They can't find it.
What tape?
The Peorage tape.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This guy knows Peorage. You do too.
I got a letter from Paul.
You guys got to get together.
We're gonna pierce our genitals later.
No, we're not.
What was the caller? Did he want anything, or was he?
Oh, it was just he'll call back.
It was Steve?
It wasn't relevant to what we were talking about.
Oh, okay.
That allows us to put phone calls over the air. I check every single phone call personally before we allow these people to go on over the air, don't we, Bob?
That's right, Mike. You're very good at that.
So let's talk about just very briefly
this tape. Yeah,
Michael Townsend is his name, and he sent me a tape. He had picked up a John Doe tape, or somebody had given him a John Doe tape in the States, and he wanted to exchange tapes. And he sent me one of his tapes that had all these, the familiar Bob logo head all over the tape, and I thought, this could be interesting. And
he needs some real Bob. That's what he thought.
It was called Dad's New Slacks, and it was a Christmas special that they had done at Christmas. So maybe I could read you a little bit of Michael's letter, and we'll play a bit of the tape.
Right, what station is it?
The station is in Maine. It's the University of Southern Maine. WMPG is the station.
Right.
You've never heard of it. Just a small community station. Let's see. My motivation beyond simply making contact with yet another subgenius home tapist, currently 13,013 in the world. Is that a relevant number? Mm-hmm.
133, yeah, that's, that was...
13013?
13013 is Bob.
Okay.
You break it down, the B becomes one and three.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Right. Yeah. Well, there you are. I'm so smart. I've been looking at this number for days.
It's me and Bob.
He has to gather even more froth and fodder for our weekly radio show. I've been keeping this sort of slack alive at WMPG since 1986. My partner, Padjack, has been there for about 5 years. We just started collaborating on the show last fall. It's very polite of you to ask permission to use my tapes over the air, me, crass copyright violator and slackmonger that I am. So on and so on. And there's more about his equipment and what he uses, and he's been doing this sort of stuff for 8 years. The tape is more, it's less talk, like what we do. It's more sort of sound collage stuff. So
what do you mean? It's not like we do.
No, but it is. It's labeled as a Church of the Subgenius spinoff.
But it's not like us.
No, not not
that respect. Would be impossible.
So, anyways, he's just happy to make contact, and he'll send us more tapes. And meanwhile, Revolution through radio. So
let's send the CBC down and interview him, and then he'll be scared.
So this is from WMPG and another version of the Church of the Subgenius.
Faster than the raindrops as I looked up and saw it painted against the sky. The outside of the building was as beautiful as the outside of anything can be. But the inside was pure enchantment. The elevator operator was Merlin. My feet touched the magic carpet as I ran down the hall. And the key that I turned in the lock was Aladdin's lamp. As I entered the tower for the first time, I knew that at last I had found contentment.
That's going to affect your health.
I don't think it'll affect it at all.
We're always just naturally unhealthy, so it doesn't matter.
And you're going to wear these Hong Kong suits that you've had made?
George and I have had any made.
Haven't you?
No, first day, you know.
We read about it in the papers.
Oh, we never used to leave it right in the papers. Paul got one, that's all. Yeah, just two.
Our road manager.
Excellent work.
Yeah, that's all right. All
right. It's okay, yeah, I mean... Oh,
sorry.
Excellent work for the 19th century mind. Oh, Mike.
Yeah, there we are. Okay, Colin.
Something going wrong, Bob?
No, it's all right.
Excellent work for the 19th century mind. Nowhere near what I can do live.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Is he going to... Well, You'll probably send him a copy of what we're saying about him now, right?
I might. Yeah, we'll see.
So,
I think it was good radio.
Yeah.
Comparatively speaking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Good. It's not comparison to other college radio that I've heard.
Okay.
It is compared.
It is good. It is
compared
good.
To others.
Yeah, I wouldn't turn it off. And I listen to the radio at work when I'm in the dark room every day and...
Yeah,
you know radio.
I know the radio.
Remind people you are listening to CKLN. This is the radio CKLN, and my name is Michael Dyer here with J.R. Bob Dobbs and Snyder's special guest Doug. Doug, it's good to have you here. And
thank you, Mike.
We do have a phone call, Bob.
Oh, great.
Would you like to acknowledge a listener?
I will.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I'm calling.
Look, the bloody documents are at Doctors for Bob headquarters.
I know.
Pick them up, all right?
Coming through on his pledged promises there.
You're welcome.
That
was Bob Marshall.
I listened to the Honegger tape.
Yeah.
And
it's a good one.
It's a very good one.